Welcome back, Left Reckoners. I'm Matt Leck. With me, as always, David Grissom. Hello, David.
Hey, man.
And joining us now is another Texan, my buddy Chris Leal. Chris, how's it going?
Happy to be here.
Chris, introduce yourself a little bit. You are a teacher and recently, and perhaps in the future, a candidate for political office. Tell us about that.
That's right. Yeah. So my name is Chris Leal. I'm in Dallas. I'm a Dallas native. I currently teach a law and justice class to 7th and 8th graders here in Dallas ISD. Before that, in a prior life, I had a business career in economics and finance. Lived in New York for a while, came back to Dallas. I've been teaching, and yeah, we just recently finished a campaign for state legislature to represent Dallas down in Austin. It was a pretty crazy race. There ended up being five candidates, and at the end, all five candidates got within 800 votes. So wow. So we missed the runoff by 380 votes, but you know, we ran a really strong campaign that we're proud of, and definitely open to something in the future, but we'll just kind of wait and see how things shake out. So
now, I've known Chris for just over 10 years now. We met in a study abroad program in the city of London, England. And it's interesting, like, you know, what we've bonded over was we were both opinion editors of our college newspapers and very politically minded. So we had a lot of instances where we'd be in, say, like the Kensington McDonald's, and the staff had to come tell us to stop arguing so forcefully about Brexit or something like that. So that's where we were forged. And you have had this in mind for a while, like you've wanted to go into public service. And it's been inspiring to see you sort of and your team build out. So tell us about what you sort of practically what you learned going into this, what you expected, and talk about, you know, I know you have Christian there as your campaign manager and a few other folks. Like, what did you learn about this process?
Yeah. Well, to just back up a half second, you know, Matt and I had a lot of very loud, partially inebriated arguments about politics and philosophy at McDonald's at like 2 a.m. in London. And then, you know, we came back to the States and Matt moved to New York first and I went there shortly after. And, you know, but so and he knows well that this is something, you know, this type of public service is something I was always interested in. I never wanted to do it in New York. You know, Texas is where I'm from. That's my home. And as everyone's seen on the news lately, there's a lot of work to do here in Texas. Mm-hmm. And so, but partially, I think just it being something I was interested in so long made it easy for a team to come together. I had a lot of people around me that I've known for so long. A friend, Heather, who ran our social media, I've known since we were both 3 years old. A friend, Christian, we've known for, you know, I don't know, 15 plus years, all the people I've known for a long time. There were some more recent members of the team, which I met through teaching and the teachers union. A friend, Rosie, she was invaluable to our campaign, and we've only known each other for about a year. A friend, Julio Acosta, who's a huge sort of organizer and activist in Dallas and throughout Texas, came in later on to help manage the campaign. You know, we had a really good team, and all of us, you know, so we had people around us that had prior campaign experience, but none of us were campaign professionals or political consultants by trade, or just huge political, you know, hobbyists, if you will. And, just wanted to say, hey, you know, let's take a public school teacher and run this thing without corporate PACs and, without high priced consultants and, just get in there and see what we can do. And, you know, we're in Texas, all of our, you know, we led pretty strongly with the P word, with progressive. You know, it was on, if you go to our website, it's right at the top on all of our yard signs, progressive Texas Democrat, all our handouts, progressive Texas Democrat. And at a time, you know, we're still even now, a lot of people in Texas anyway, they're like, can you say that? You're using that word? Like, I had people with, you know, supporters, I went to go put yard signs out and they're like, hey, you know, where have you been? We want a yard sign. Just wanted to tell you, you know, you can't use that P word. You can't use progressive. Like, I want you to win. You got to be careful. And he wanted a yard sign. I was like, well, you know, our yard signs have really boldly progressive Texas Democrat on there. And I gave him my little pitch and he's like, all right, put the yard sign in, you know, in my out there. And so
look at that.
you know, we were happy to run a campaign like that.
Yeah, I mean, despite not winning, you did get a lot of union endorsements, for instance. I mean, you mentioned the AFT already. Like, talk a little bit about that. Like, I think that – and I'll just play a little bit from, like, your ad here, because you really did foreground this stuff, mm-hmm. I think, in a way that – it's the sort of thing where if I hadn't known you personally, it would have been, like, as a producer, something I would have – it hits all the right buttons for me. So here is this.
Good evening, Dallas ISD Board of Trustees.
My name is Chris Leal, and I'm a union teacher. I'm the son of a union pipe fitter, proud Dallas native, and descendant of generations of Tejanos. As a teacher, I see so much potential in our kids and education system. As a Texan...
So yeah, people can go for Texas for the whole thing there. But yeah, like, I mean... You know, right off the bat, your dad's a union pipe fitter like that. I think, you know, that's at least like if you're going to take a flyer on a primary challenger, like that's exactly what I personally want to see.
Yeah. Yeah. My background is economics and wages have been flat in this country for 50 years. It's something I just repeat as many times as anyone will listen. And you know, I'm in a union, my dad's in a union, my brother's in a union, my uncle's in a union, my stepdad's in a union, like my girlfriend's parents, both are her parents retired union. So, you really do see this stuff firsthand. And when you just look at all the charts and all the data, you're like, oh, the middle class is declining. Oh, wages haven't grown in 50 years at the same time, right? Union rates just keep dropping. I mean, that's the operative thing that we need to focus on if we're going to fix a lot of this stuff. And so, yeah, we did really good on endorsements. We had nearly as many endorsements as the entire field combined, about 20 organizations, AFT, AFL-CIO, CWA, you know, all the big unions. And we were really proud to have that support. They did, especially AFT, they did, the teachers union did a lot for us. Incredibly grateful of that.
You know, we have a lot of people who listen to this show who have either already run or are considering maybe running for, you know, local state office. You talked a little bit about the unions just then. But when it comes to not just, you know, getting your name out there in the sense of like marketing, but actually like getting buy-in with different community groups and reaching out to different organizations. I mean, could you tell anybody any advice or lessons that you sort of learned, you know, introducing yourself to you know, different groups or being able to build those relationships in the course of the campaign?
Yeah. You've got to be out there. You've got to be sincere. There's so many of these groups are used to the candidates stopping by, you know, mm-hmm. depending on the time of the year and saying their spiel and then going away and then coming back. A lot of them can learn just enough to say the right words to talk to these groups. I think the reason we were able to just clean up and dramatically lead in these endorsements is because they could tell that we were sincere and we were passionate about this stuff. And we weren't just there to, you know, for a hoodwink or to, you know, mm-hmm. get a logo and go or a check and go away. We also did something a little unusual. We put out not just a verbal platform, but we put out a policy platform of over 60 policy ideas in 8 different areas, the economy, education, you know, infrastructure, so forth. Which a lot of candidates don't do because then they might be held accountable to that, God forbid, right? Mm-hmm. So, but it helped us once you already think through all these policies in these different areas. When we went to labor, we're like, hey, here's the stuff we've already publicly called for, this, 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 and this. Education groups, here's the stuff we've publicly called for already, this, 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 and this. You know, very specific and action-oriented. I think that resonated with some of them.
I mean, that makes a hell of a lot of sense, especially when people are so used to the kind of generic campaign. I mean, I remember, you know, John Delaney, who ended up running for president, when I was at school, they paid $20 an hour to knock on doors for him. So that was like a job I did in college, absolute, corporate Democrat, not somebody who I really would support. But his campaign was hilarious because this guy was like probably one of the wealthiest congressmen. Spend all their time in their professional life before being in politics, you know, effectively being a loan shark. But his, you know, platform is all just these kind of general things. It's like John Delaney supports jobs, right? it's like for who and for what, right? And I do think that that is something that I really did like watching in your campaign, was that it wasn't just kind of like boilerplate, like, we think everybody should have a job, right? It's like, this is the kind of things that we want to do with power to build that future. And, you know, that helps not only, I think, in the campaign, but also having something to hold other elected officials accountable to. It's like, you know, y'all have done the work of thinking about, like, what we can demand of people who are, you know, in the ledge in the future, too.
Yeah, we really approached it like I try to do a lot of things. Just imagine you, it's day one, you already got the job, you already won the election. Now, what are you going to do, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have to think through it if you're going to be actually action oriented or policy oriented. And so, you know, that was the approach we took in sort of putting a plan together.
Yeah, and I could say as a sincerity, Chris really cares about the spiel. There's a good chance that he gave you a Texan the talk on how you can revitalize the party. It's the same one that he wanted to give to me and all of our friends here in New York, but COVID happened, and he had that was like his last sort of months in New York. But talk about that the sort of like Texas history. You know, I remember like talking about LBJ a lot. I was reading the Robert Caro books when I was in London. Like that sort of history of like progressive, right? Like the progressive Democrat, there is a history there that actually like had some awareness of how to fight for things, actual like deliver goods and services to people using the government. And so talk about that a little bit and how people were receptive to it. I'm sure voters were, I'm sure probably even like younger Democrats were, and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, you know, that was a key theme. Now, you know, I have this whole 45-minute presentation, you know, with charts and stuff. You can't really do that as a candidate, right? You can't just get out there and lecture. So the campaign was really an expression of walking that walk. Okay, you know, and so we led with things like progressive Texas Democrat, trying to pique people's interest. They're like, progressive in Texas, what do you mean? You're like, yeah, please ask me about it, right? There's actually this long history there. You know, going as a history of progressive populism, basically, is where it comes from in the first Gilded Age that created, you know, statesmen like Sam Rayburn from North Texas, longest serving speaker of the House in history still to this day, was, you know, despite FDR getting all the credit, this guy hand wrote the bill that created the SEC. He created the FTC. He created the FCC. He did a lot of these things, too. Sometimes 20 years before it was done in the New Deal. He did it when he was at the state legislature in Texas. Texas is actually the second state in the country to have antitrust laws on the books before even the federal government did. So in a lot of ways, we really did show the country and the National Democratic Party how to be the party of the people. You know, for a while, the entire legislative branch of this country was led by two Texas Democrats. And so, you know, it's trying to get out there and remind people of that. I think it's really important. You know, just thinking about it, it's been 3 decades since Democrats have won a statewide race in Texas. Okay. Not a great streak. And that's why when you talk to Democrats down here, they usually have their tail between their legs. You know, like they don't belong here. It's like, oh, we snuck in this Republican land or whatever. And it's like, no, guys, like that's not a message or a posturing that's going to connect with voters in Texas. You're not going to turn Texas blue like that. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a spine and stand up for this stuff and have values and connect it to Texas values. And we actually do have a legacy here. So you're just trying to get out and remind people of that. And, you know, outside of the campaign, I have this presentation to do this, but the campaign was just a sort of an experiment to say, let's just put these values back out there and live them. And it's been fun. And it was a narrative that I didn't reverse engineer, and it didn't come from a single book. It came from, you know, Matt and I for years, you know, 5-6 years almost. Every Friday we'd get together, we'd talk about what we're reading and talk about this stuff. And it just came up, starting with the Caro books. You're reading about this history of progressive populism. And then you read this book about antitrust, and they mention, you know, Wright Patman and another old school Texan. And you just read all these pieces of the puzzle. And you're like, wait a second, there's a narrative here that I've never heard before. You know, all this stuff originating from Texas. It was really exciting.
Yeah. And that's an important lesson, too, about how you have this sort of like, I guess, grand vision. But when you fundamentally, like when the rubber hits the road for your candidacy and the campaign to folks, it's bread and butter issues. And that's a lesson that I think like a lot of some people that actually I can think of one caller in particular, called into the Majority Report, you know, with this idea, grand vision of like, you need me there to fix the Democratic Party. And it's like, first of all, that's a tall order. So you better be able to do some things in the meantime for folks that actually want you there. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about teaching. You made a really good point on Majority Report about the sort of like a couple things going on with the anti-CRT stuff. One is just, you know, the trying to impose a mythic version of history onto children, which suits the Republican Party very well. Then that's transparent enough, and it's, you know, to hide and basically it obscure the role of white supremacy in the country's founding. And it also works as an attack on teachers. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, look, our public education system, I mean, in many places across the country, but in Texas in particular, is under attack on all sides. All sides from, you know, teacher pay, right? We have a nationwide teacher shortage, first off. But meanwhile, teachers in Texas get paid $10,000 less than average, all right? At the same time, we're attacking their retirement benefits and trying to reduce those. Where our per-student funding, our per-pupil funding is 43rd out of 50 in the nation. You know, we're attacking the curriculum with this CRT stuff and these banned book stuff. In Texas, we have quite a bit of charter schools. You know, aside from at the state budget level, all right, we've been cutting the education budget at the top of the line. And then we've been a stealth cut is taking money out of that pile and giving it to charter schools. Right, it's another form of pseudo budget cuts, at least for truly public education. One thing that they would love to do in Texas, and they've tried before and they failed, is a voucher system. Right, it's just another form of privatization. Fortunately, weirdly, they failed in the past because we have some unlikely allies in rural Texas. All right, in the rural communities, these are like really small towns. They want quality public schools. They're probably only got one high school, one middle school, one elementary school. They do not want charter schools or private schools coming into these little communities. They don't want it, right? They might vote other ways on other things plenty often, but they do not want private. They don't want to privatize public education. And so we've been able to beat back vouchers in the past. But what you're seeing now with this seemingly manufactured hysteria around CRT and book banning that just like, you know, came out of nowhere, it's really just a prelude to another effort at this voucher and this privatization scheme. And so you saw it this cycle. Everyone's talking about it. They passed some CRT bills, two of them. And just watch. Next legislative session in Texas at the state level, they'll be like, how about these vouchers again? What they're trying to do is kind of diabolical. They're trying to peel off that Republican support in those rural areas in Texas because all of those same voters who prize public education are caught up in the CRT hysteria. You know, so they're really playing chess about this and their attacks on public education.
Yeah, real quick, I think the anti-LGBT stuff we're seeing in like Florida, for instance, is the same sort of thing. It's just like this is to try to recreate with new issues the sort of white flight against busing sort of, you know, keep our schools white stuff from like basically before we were born, right before we were born or around when we were born. So, yeah, go ahead, David.
No, I mean, I was just going to echo what Chris was saying and just like, at least what my perspective is on that strategy too, is that especially like, as Chris was saying, like in rural Texas, like, you know, the schools are not just something that like people want quality education, obviously, but they're also like big social hubs, you know, like people obviously know how much football is big here, but you know, there's entire families who like, they haven't had a kid walk into like the actual in a classroom there in 30 years, right? Because they're an older guy, their kids are all grown up, but they still go to the football game every single Friday, right? They're like big parts of the community, and all of this CRT stuff is actually to make it seem like, oh yeah, your schools have been infected with these, you know, dangerous ideologues who are trying to destroy the fabric of our community because they can't wage a direct war on public education. And I'd also just add, like, knowing your history too, it's like, you know, the fight for public education in this country was a fight that was done by working class people who demanded and wanted to make sure that they have the same rights to be educated as the rich people and the elites, right? And that's just like another really beautiful tradition that we have in the U.S. and particularly the South. It's like this really, you know, powerful fight of people who are our ancestors, for this kind of stuff. I mean, I just would be curious to hear what you think on that, Chris. And I just wanted to add too, because, you know, I think on top of the CRT stuff and trying to undermine schools, it's like this mythology, this Texas mythology that we're getting from people like Patrick and Paxton, right? By the way, I love anybody who wants to come here, but it is very funny that the boy from Maryland, the boy from North Dakota are the ones who are the most gung-ho about pushing, you know, the most fantastical narratives about our history and wanting to obscure like the actual history. Because I don't know, we did a segment on the show a little while ago, Chris, about the Texas Rangers and like the fence cutting wars in Texas, right? And I wanted to do it because I'm on all these little forums and stuff, and I'm seeing some guy bragging about the Texas Rangers, like this is when they finally brought law and order to Texas. And I just had the thought to myself, it's like, you know, your ancestor is far more likely to be a fence cutter, one of these guys who's fighting against the enclosure of like of West Texas, than they were to be somebody who owned the land or or a Texas Ranger, right? And it's a huge part of like I'm somebody who's a very proud Texan, like loves the history. And I get very frustrated because you see, what the right is doing is trying to own this like false history. And I don't think that, you know, understanding our history necessarily all has to be negative, because like there are all these like really great, you know, histories of people fighting up for progressive and left wing values along with, you know, the horrors too. And I just get worried sometimes too, that the right is so dominating on trying to put up one, the fantastical narrative, waging war on our schools. And also the left on the back foot is unable to really uphold, you know, this really, really great and interesting progressive and working class tradition as well.
Yeah. I really love that you mentioned the fence cutting wars, because there's, great books on this. It's called The Great Cowboy Strikes of 1886. All right. During this Gilded Age, during this birth of this progressive populism, when, you know, the first labor strikes in Texas were actually cowboys, right? Doesn't get more Texan than that. I mean, it's literally cowboys in response to this big corporate cattle money coming in and buying up all these ranches and then fencing it all off. And these working class, like overworked cowboys were like, you know, screw all that. And and it's funny you mentioned too, right? All these people, these Texas elected officials who aren't from Texas, right? Let's not forget Ted Cruz. Not from
Texas, no, of course. You
know, George H.W. Bush, not from Texas. Like, I don't know why you get to write the rules on what Texas values are when none of these people are from Texas. Okay.
Who's the North Dakotan?
What? Paxton.
Really?
I don't know how long that was. He probably was an oil guy, but I just know that.
Well, Matt Gaetz's dad was also from North Dakota, so we're not sending our best.
But back to your point about, you know, teachers and stuff too, you made a really great point about the sports element, the cultural element. And I mean, it's on the campaign, it's crazy how powerful and how much solidarity there is amongst teachers, everyone. Mm-hmm. I knocked on thousands of doors, right? You're knocking on doors. Some people love to talk to you. A lot of people are like, oh, okay, I don't have time or whatever. You know, they might be like, they'll knock a door. They'll just barely peek their head in. You know, they're like, hey, I don't have much time to talk. I'm like, it's okay. You know, I'm Dallas native, union member, progressive Democrat, public school teacher, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, you're a teacher? What do you teach? And now they like want to talk. Or they're like, you know, my wife's a teacher. I'm a teacher. My mom was a teacher. My, you know, brother's a teacher. Everyone's got a teacher in their family. And there's just so much solidarity there. It's such a shame. I mean, the unions are doing great. It's such a shame that we're not empowering these unions more. Because there's a lot of power in that, in our communities, I think, amongst teachers. Everyone has a teacher. That's the reason I became a teacher. Everyone's got a teacher in their life that was so influential. And it's not always just like a college professor. It's like a middle school teacher for me anyway, you know, or elementary school teacher even. And, it makes me optimistic about this fight, but we definitely have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. I mean, that is so true about, I mean, the teachers. I just posted a picture. I was in Madrid on vacation. I posted a picture of flamenco, and I was talking to my Spanish teacher, who was that for me in high school, Senora Casa. It's really, you see why they're coming on all fronts. And like, it's not a coincidence that all these things target teachers and public schools.
Or even community. I mean, like, you know, just going back to the, you know, one, the abortion law, and now the trans laws, like, you know, one, you know, it's like turning people into snitches, but it's also like, these are meant to like disrupt communities, right? To like create an environment where you're looking out, you know, to see, catch your neighbor doing something, right? I mean, they like, they're like, first and foremost, they're attacks on people's basic human rights. Right. And secondary, like why they're like an additional reason that they're extremely sinister is because they really are targeting also a social fabric to create an environment where you have to be worried that like your neighbor might, you know, like if you're having a crisis situation and you might need to get medical treatment, need an abortion, you might be worried that your neighbor's gonna tattle on you. I mean, you know, these really are, you know, assaults again on people's direct human rights, but also on like basic community, you know, the fabric of our communities, right? And it's like from the neighborhood to the school. I mean, that's the way that the GOP is trying to play politics in the state of Texas right now.
And the trans, the same thing, like with bounties, with the abortion, mm-hmm. anti-abortion stuff, same thing with trans children, where they expect teachers, you know, that was in their bill anyway, to report, you know, their parents for child abuse, like in their teachers, yeah. You know, like my job is to create a safe learning environment in my classroom and make my children feel comfortable, you know, so they can learn, and they want us to be start trying to put their parents in jail. You know, it's insane.
Would you mind just if we have time, you know, just on the CRT thing, because I have some friends who are teachers and even people at, you know, the University of Texas who are as far, you know, they're people in like the arts or something like that. They're not people who are teaching history. But, you know, they've been getting instructions from the university about subjects like they can't touch. And like even if it's not explicit, it's chilling in the sense that, yeah. Like, you know, you don't want to end up on the wrong side of the law. You don't want to end up getting yourself in trouble. I mean, could you talk about that, like, as a teacher, what that experience has been like?
Yeah, you know, surprisingly, and I don't know, I'm sure all the different districts do this differently. Yeah, Dallas yeah. ISD might be an outlier, I'm not sure. But there hasn't been a lot of top-down guidance on it. Or even at my school, I teach at a particularly small, it's a magnet school. You know, it's about 400 students. It's a singleton school, so there's one teacher per subject per grade. You know, but I teach a law and justice class. It's a social studies elective. Like, try to teach a history of law and justice in this country without talking about any of the stuff, right? And or they're trying to prevent you from even talking about current events. And it's look, I, you know, maybe I shouldn't say it as publicly as much, but it's like I'm not going to censor the truth for my students. I'm here to teach critical thinkers. I'm going to tell them the stuff, and they're all on social media. You know, they see all this stuff. We live in really, really crazy times, and they come to me. They're like, "Mister, what about this?" Or when we passed all these laws last year, they're like, "Mister, so anyone can just have a gun now?" You know, "Mister, are these laws, you know, going to impact, you know, what we're doing in class?" Like, they have questions. You know, they see all this stuff. They're not dumb, and you know, and I'm not about to, you know. Teachers get into these professions because they care and they want to make a difference, and not about to go lie or deceive my students. And, you know,
and that's the best.
Wants to take issue with that, they can.
Those are the best teachers too. Like the teachers that give you an actual glimpse of what an adult understanding begins to look like, or not even understanding, like process of achieving understanding. Right.
Well,
like,
it's not forced either. Here's one more anecdote I want to share is we had parent meet the teacher night. At the beginning of school year, and you know, I have some Bez and Dr. King posters up on my wall, and this mom came in with her daughter, and they were in there. I was like, "Oh, you know, we'll start out talking about the Constitution, we'll work up the mock trials, yada yada." And she's like, "Oh, I see your posters over there. Are you going to teach them about stuff like that? Are you going to talk about this?" I was like, I didn't know how she felt about this. I was like, "Yeah, you know, I mean, we're going to talk about that stuff. I mean, they're important figures." And she turned her daughter and was like, "See, you love social history or social justice. It's going to be great." Like, she wanted me to teach social justice stuff in these classes. Like, you know, I mean, this isn't, it's not like teachers forcing some alien curriculum. We're just teaching them about honest and open history.
I mean, yeah. And that is a threat to some people. Let's talk about other issues, Chris. I know you've talked about maybe this is just me remembering our Fridays, but maybe broadband. We talk a lot about housing. Like, what issues do you think going forward are going to be like the ones to really zero in on?
Well, you know, here in Texas, everything's under attack all at once, unfortunately, right? That was our 10 months of special sessions we saw last time, from voting rights to, you know, reproductive rights and education, you know, the economy, of course, wages, everything all at once. you know, but there are a lot of surprising issues, which I hate, you know, the consensus is that there's such a divide between urban and rural. And I know these are things that you guys talk about often, and but Dems do so poorly in these rural areas. But, you know, things like public education, right, is an example that rural and urban voters care about. Things like the broadband, which you just mentioned, quality broadband and quality access to healthcare. They're very concerned about all these things. Criminal justice reform, you know, infrastructure. Like, there's so many issues. And usually it's just when you get focused down on the quality of life stuff that, you know, really are Texas values and not, you know, urban versus rural thing. And so I think there's a lot that we can do here, you know, especially in Texas. I think it's focusing on quality of life stuff. That is the economics and stuff. That's the historical progressive populism, the Texas style of progressivism that, you know, we've moved away from nationally. Right. There's no way around it. The National Democratic Party clearly has not cared about that. Otherwise, wages would not have been flat for half a century. Like, this is not possible. And so I think trying to return to those roots, you know, and reclaim, you know, what this word progressive means. It's not as much of, you know, the noise and bickering that we get, you know, at a surface level. It's, hey, let's make sure wages work. Hey, let's make sure people can organize, you know, in their workplace. Let's make sure people can participate in their democracy. Like, let's make sure we have quality infrastructure and we're not privatizing everything. You know, Lyndon Johnson electrifying the Hill Country and, you know, Sam Rayburn leading the effort to build national highways and farm to market roads and all this stuff. I mean, at the time, anyone else would have called that socialism, right? We just need to do, you know, what's right for working people and invest in the long term.
Well, Chris Leal, where should people follow you?
At Leal for Texas on all the platforms. You know, that's more of the campaign stuff, but it shares my personal stuff, so you can find me through there as well. And, you know, we'll definitely be active in Dallas, and we'll see what's next. And I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. And good job on the campaign.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely, man.